James chapter 1.
I think I said this last time I was up here. This is not trying to make this a habit, but I'm sorry I'm a bit drowsy this evening. I spent 4 hours or more driving around today. That's why I wasn't here this morning. I was filling in for Jim Ruff at Columbia. Since Cassandra never sent out an email saying she'd be out of town, she didn't remind me to send an email that I would be. So that's her fault, not mine. So in Sunday evenings, I've been wanting to go through different stories through the book of Genesis and make New Testament application. In a moment, we're going to go to Genesis 22 and look at Abraham being tested. And we're going to look at that with the goal of learning how to go through trials in a way that can make us stronger and increase our love for God. We all know what James chapter 1 says about going through trials, but I think applying that can be difficult. It's one thing to know something, and it's another thing to know how to apply it or know how to obtain it. So we're going to look at Abraham. But first, let's look at James 1, verses 2, 3, 4, and 12. James chapter 1, verse 2. Count it all joy, my brothers, when you meet trials of various kinds, for you know that the testing of your faith produces steadfastness. And let steadfastness have its full effect, that you may be perfect and complete, lacking in nothing. Verse 12. Blessed is the man who remains steadfast under trial, for when he has stood the test, he will receive the crown of life, which God has promised to those who love him. A couple of things I want to make a comment about, then we'll get to Genesis 22. First is what James is talking about in verses 2, 3, and 4 is not a passive experience. It's experience that does happen to us, but we have a role to take in it. And I'm not just talking about the count it all joy. I'm not talking about that at all. He's telling them to have that because of what's coming up, that the testing of their faith produces steadfastness. Well, how does it produce steadfastness? Well, I think when we let verse 4, let steadfastness have its full effect. It's kind of a weird circular reasoning. When faith is tested, it produces steadfastness, but we also need to let steadfastness have its full effect. There's a role we play in it. And he elaborates more in verse 12. Blessed is a man who remains steadfast under trial, for when he has stood the test, he will receive the crown of life. So we have to be steadfast. We need to stand the test. If you go through a trial and you don't stand the test, you don't stay steadfast, you're not going to get the benefits of the trial. Showing up to sports practice doesn't make you a better athlete. You actually have to do the practice. Going to school doesn't make you smarter unless you do the studying. Going through a trial doesn't make you stronger unless you stand steadfast through the trial. That's a hard part. We all know, like, oh yeah, when I go through a hard time, I should be happy. That's so against logic, but it's because of the fruits of this trial and what we can reap from it, we can have joy. But how do we stay steadfast under trial? That's why I want to go to Genesis 22. So let's go there. So I want to be just looking at how Abraham stood steadfast under trial, how we can practice what he did, and also how he showed his love for God through his trial. I'm going to mention, sometimes when Christians go through hard things, they'll stay steadfast, they won't do something bad, they won't leave church, but sometimes their hearts leave God because of bitterness. And I think what Abraham demonstrates for us is how to stay steadfast and also how to maintain your love for God in the midst of trials. So read with me, please, Genesis 22, verses 1 through 8. We're going to spend most of our time in these 8 verses. After these things, God tested Abraham and said to him, Abraham. And he said, Here I am. He said, Take your son, your only son Isaac, whom you love, and go to the land of Moriah, and offer him there as a burnt offering on one of the mountains of which I tell you. So Abraham rose early in the morning, saddled his donkey, and took two of his young men with him and his son Isaac. And he cut the wood for the burnt offering and arose and went to the place of which God had told him. On the third day, Abraham lifted up his eyes and saw the place from afar. Then Abraham said to his young men, "Stay here with the donkey. I and the boy will go over there and worship and come again to you." And Abraham took the wood of the burnt offering and laid it on Isaac his son. Then he took in his hand the fire and the knife. So they went both of them together. And Isaac said to his father Abraham, "My father." And he said, "Here I am, my son." He said, "Behold, the fire and the wood, but where is the lamb for a burnt offering?" Abraham said, "God will provide for himself the lamb for a burnt offering, my son." And they both went, so they went both of them together. So in these eight verses, I think there's a whole lot we can learn about how to go through trials, how to be tested. To be clear up front, I'm not saying every time we go through a trial, it is a test, but we know this test is a trial. So by looking at this test that Abraham goes through, we can learn how to go through trials, just to be clear. So Abraham is called by God, and he answers immediately, and he tells him probably the last thing any father wanted to hear. "I'm not a father. The closest thing I have to being a father is I have a dog. But I know it's not the same. I'm not even going to pretend it's the same. But as much as I would hate to have to offer my dog, I imagine being told to having a father have to offer their child is just exponentially harder." And you know, Abraham has a one-up over all you ordinary fathers, because his son was the child of promise. So not only would it be awful to have to offer your own son, this kind of seems to contradict all the promises he's been trusting in with God so far. So this isn't just a difficult emotionally, spiritually, this is difficult too. I don't know if any of us can just fathom just how difficult this would be. We all know it would be incredibly difficult. So God tells him to offer his son, and to offer him as a burnt offering, a horrible death. And in verse 3, what does Abraham do? This is the first point I want to make this evening. He rises early in the morning. Now, I'm not about to preach to you about waking up early in the morning and making your bed. But what this shows us is one of two things. This is either Abraham, after following God for so long, demonstrating a very immediate trust. You can kind of measure how much someone trusts somebody especially one with authority over them, by how quickly or lack of reluctance they have when they follow their commands. When I was in the cabinet making industry and I was working in quality control, and I was running the quality control, since I was young, there'd be a lot of older people who'd be skeptic, who had some skepticism towards my ability and skills. But as they got to know me and they learned to trust me, they were not as argumentative and they didn't second guess everything I told them. But it took a while to get there. Until they got to that point and they didn't trust me and they looked at me like some kid, I would tell them to do something and they wouldn't believe me because they didn't trust me. It wasn't because they were bad employees, they just didn't trust. And so it could be that. And I think most people would probably say that, and I wouldn't argue with him about it. It could be that Abraham just trusted God so much, when God said jump, Abraham said how high. That very well could be it. You know what it also could be? It could be that Abraham knew if he procrastinated, he might not ever do it. You know, there's a lot of value in when you know you have something really hard to do and not putting it off. Some of us, me, by nature, are procrastinators. And oftentimes, when I don't do what I should, it doesn't start off with me saying, "No thanks, God, I'm not going to do it." What it often starts off with is, "You know, that's really hard, I'll do that tomorrow." And then when tomorrow comes, I say, "Well, maybe I'll do it on Monday." And then I say, "Well, I'll wait till the weekend, I'll have energy on the weekend." And then old Matt ends up not doing it at all. A really good way to make sure you don't fail your trial is when you know you have that hard thing to do, do it right away. There's a saying in like self-help books called like you need to eat a frog daily and you eat it in the morning. Because once you do that hard thing, you swallowed that figurative frog, not a literal frog. Once you swallow that figurative frog, you can do any other hard thing you need to do that day because it's not as bad as swallowing that frog. That could be it. I don't know. The text doesn't say, which makes it great for a sermon because we can hypothesize whatever we want. But I sometimes wonder if that's what it might be. I'm sure Abraham felt a whole lot of dread. And you know as well as I do, the longer he would have put it off, the harder it would have been. So it could be that Abraham has just grown so much, when God told him to do it, he did it immediately. Or it could have been Abraham knew his limits as a person, and when he came under hard times, he knew the longer he procrastinated, the harder it'd be. Either way, there's application there. We need to both, grow in our trust for God and not put off doing the right thing. Point number one. Something else he does in verse 3 is, who does he take with him? So he takes Isaac, of course. He takes a donkey to carry their stuff. It's a multiple-day journey, so they're going to need to carry food and other provisions. But he takes something else with him. He takes two young men. Now, once again, the text doesn't say why, so we're going to hypothesize here. But I think the benefit of taking those young people is there's accountability. There's encouragement. One of the number one ways to make a trial harder is by going through it alone. There's a reason why God has given us the church. Remember what we're told to do? We're to come here and encourage each other and build each other up, encourage each other to love and good works. It's really hard to get that when you're by yourself. It's really hard. In fact, Proverbs 18, verse 1 says, "He who isolates himself seeks his own desire." I forget what the second part is, but it doesn't matter because the first part is what matters. When we isolate ourselves, it is a big way to empower the flesh. Abraham didn't isolate himself, which would have been really easy to do. I doubt he wanted to tell anybody about what he was doing. In fact, I don't know if the two servants knew what he was doing. Isaac clearly didn't know what they were doing. But even so, he still made sure he had companions with him. So if you're going through a trial and you don't even think you can tell anybody, oh well, you can still have people with you, even if they have no idea why. That was the best thing that Job's friends did for him, by the way, was by spending time with him and not talking. So if you need some of Job's friends when they did well, that's okay. Take somebody with you, whatever that means. Take people with you. Abraham was a very strong man in his faith, and he still took people with him too. Continuing on, the third thing I want to bring up is in verses 6 and 7. In verse 6 and 7, they separate. Oh, actually, I'm going to start in verse 5. So in verse 5, he tells the young men, "Stay here, and I and the boy will go over to worship and come back to you." We often make comments about Abraham talking about God's provision in verse 7, but we see that present in his mind back in verse 5. He doesn't say, "I will come back to you." The implication is, "I and the boy will come back to you." Even though Abraham is getting ready to offer his son, in his mind, he still has hope he's going to come back with him. We see that even more clearly in verse 7. Where Isaac asks, "Dad, what is the offering? We have fire and wood. What are we going to kill?" His dad still hasn't told him it's him yet. But Abraham tells him something that is not just extremely tactful. It demonstrates his mentality. Abraham says, "God will provide for himself the land for the lamb for the burnt offering, my son." Now, sometimes I've joked around talking about this story about how tactful it is and how he dodges the question. But biblically, in Hebrews chapter 11, I think verse 19, somewhere around there, he talks about how Abraham knew God was able to raise Isaac from the dead. Now, that doesn't just show how much Abraham trusted God. that showed how healthy Abraham's thinking was. See, when we go through trials and we're being told to give something up, it can be really easy to think, oh, God doesn't want me to be happy. God's trying to take the things I love away from me. God is just wanting me to be miserable. It's really easy to think in a way that is almost bitter and not just presumptuous, but also incorrect. If Abraham would have had a sour attitude this whole time and said, oh, God promised me the son and now he's taking him away, not only would that have been extremely unhelpful, that's also not true. That would have been presumptuous. You know that? God was not intending to take Isaac away from him. We know the end of the story. God allows Isaac to live. There's times where you're going to go through trials and you're going to have to choose between God and the world, and you're going to have to be willing to give something up, and then at the last moment, you're allowed to keep it. There's been times where, when I was working as a cabinet maker, there was a lot of pressure at one point. We were getting a lot of jobs from bars and establishments I can't even say from the pulpit. And I was thinking, well, I can't do any of this stuff. So I came into work one day, I wore my slippers because I expected to be fired that day. And I told my boss, I can't do this. I can't do these jobs for you. And since I figured I was going to get fired, I started telling him everything else I had a problem with too. You know what? He said, okay, you don't have to do that. Get to work. I thought I was going to lose my job. I'm thankful because of that job, I was able to save up money and start preaching. But I had no idea it was going to turn out that way. I was very uncomfortable that day working in a wood shop wearing slippers. But it's because I was expecting to lose that job. There's going to be times where we go through trials, and guess what? God doesn't want you to be miserable. The purpose of trials is to grow your faith, not make you mad or to ruin your day. Sometimes God will have mercy. And we need to keep that in mind, the purpose of trials and God's character. Even though God was appearing to be about to take away perhaps Abraham's greatest thing in this physical world, his most precious possession, Abraham still understood that God provides. As much as he might have to give to God, he still understood that God will provide. And that is so, so important. Because I'm telling you, we've all seen this. People who stand the test, they don't give in to whatever physical sin, they don't do the physical bad thing, but in their hearts, they're embittered towards God. Remember, part of receiving the crown of life for standing steadfast through trials is loving God. What's the point of doing the right thing if you're embittered and angry towards God at the end? You might have done the right thing outside, but you failed inside. And I think a really good way to help at least arm ourselves against that is by making sure we don't forget God's character and we think about him in a healthy and true way. The thing is, what Abraham isn't saying is not just positive self-help nonsense. It is literally true. It is true that God did provide that lamb. And it is true that God does have the power to raise the dead. And it was true that Abraham was going to return with his son. Abraham had no idea how it was going to be. But every word he said was true. And we have to think like that too. And if we have trouble thinking like that, we need to work to think more like that. I think these words are the strongest testament of his faith here, in my opinion. You can disagree with me if you want. Anyway, let's read verses 9 through 14. When they came to the place of which God had told him, Abraham built an altar there and laid the wood in order and bound Isaac his son and laid him on the altar on top of the wood. Then Abraham reached out his hand, took the knife and to slaughter his son. But the angel of the Lord called to him from heaven and said, Abraham, Abraham. And he said, Here I am. He said, Do not lay your hand on the boy or do anything to him. For now I know you fear God, seeing that you have not withheld your son, your only son, from me. Abraham lifted up his eyes and looked, and behold, behind him was a ram caught in a thicket by his horns. So Abraham went, took the ram, and offered it up as a burnt offering instead of his son. So Abraham called the name of the place, "The Lord will provide," as it said to this day, "On the mount of the Lord it shall be provided." So in verse 12, God tells him, don't do anything more to Isaac. Let him go because I know you fear God. Imagine how foolish Abraham would have felt if he would have bitterly told himself and everybody else, God hates me, he's going to kill my son. He really saved himself a lot of trouble by not thinking and acting that way. We can learn from that too. But the more important thing I want to get to is after God has mercy on Abraham, mercy on Isaac, maybe more, and spares him and gives him the ram instead, Abraham does something that I think we should also do after a trial is over and we've learned from it. Abraham does something to remember this trial. At the very end, he calls a place, "On the mount of the Lord, it shall be provided." He calls it, "The Lord will provide, as it is said, on the mount of the Lord it shall be provided." Abraham did something so that the lesson he learned can also be learned by other people too. You know, this is a pet peeve of mine. I'm sorry I say this so much from the pulpit, but I really wish my brethren would share the stories of God working in their life and giving them victory. I love it when you guys tell me about all the ways God has helped you conquer sin, do the right thing, and stand up to evil. Because you know what that does? That encourages me. You're not bragging. If you give glory to God and you're humble about it, I know it's not all about you. I think sometimes we're afraid to talk about what God does for us because we don't want to sound proud. But Abraham, he makes it about God. He doesn't name the place where God almost gave me a heart attack. He doesn't name the place the hardest thing I've ever done. He makes it about what has God done for him and what he's learned. And just that alone is helpful. Sometimes, once again, when we go through trials, we can make it about us. We can remember it by all the hard things God made us do. And those are all the wrong takeaways. Those are all the wrong takeaways. Abraham makes the right takeaways here. He makes it about God, makes it about what he learned about God, and he makes it about something he can share with others. When we go through trials, we need to do the same thing. Even if all it is writing in our journal. Maybe that's where we start. We just write in a journal about the ways God has helped us grow. Maybe you give an invitation about it. Maybe you give a sermon. Maybe not make it the whole sermon, but make it part of the sermon. Whatever it is, whenever God delivers us and whenever we grow, it's something that we really should share. Is Abraham being boastful or proud by this? No, I don't think so. In fact, it's messianic, actually. And when we do that, that cements in our mind. That is letting steadfastness have its full effect. When we share it, when we remember it, when we do something and give glory to God, that makes that lesson stick a lot more. I don't know about you guys, but there have been times where I've learned lessons, I've done hard things, and God has helped me through, but then I forget about it. And then I mess up again. Has that ever happened to you? Now, I don't know if doing what Abraham did is a perfect cure to prevent it, but I think it would probably help. At least help us not forget those lessons so quick. That's our sermon this evening. I just wanted to share a couple ways we can learn from Abraham. When God tells us to act, we need to act, either because we've learned to trust him so much, so we act immediately, or we know we dread it, so we don't procrastinate. We need to take people with us if we are going through a hard time, as much as possible, get support. We need to think about God in a healthy way. We need to understand the purpose of trials. Just because God is having us go through a trial, that doesn't mean he's our enemy. We need to remember, he will continue to provide. And last but not least, after God has brought us through a trial, we need to make sure to give glory to him, and if possible, share with other people so they can be encouraged too. I think those are some ways we can grow from our trials. If there's anybody here who needs the help of the congregation, please come forward while we sing the song of invitation.